For many Commander players over the past few years, webcam games have become part of our gaming ecosystem. Websites like Spelltable have made it relatively easy and painless to get games in with players from all over the world, from many different walks of life and many different playstyles. But there are challenges, adjustments, and lessons to be learned to make the most out of this unique environment for playing Commander, as well as some unique lessons we can take away from the virtual tabletop to just about any game of Commander. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we have a lesson from VEDH. Over the past few years, there's been a lot of webcam Commander, which has come to be known as VEDH. And it's allowed many of us to get games in with players who we'd never otherwise have the opportunity to sit across the table from. But VEDH does have the downside of making it hard to read the person across from you. Humans, as social animals, really do depend on being able to see and read one another's facial expressions and body language in order to interact normally. And when the webcam is pointed at your playmat instead of your face, it can lead to games where everyone clams up and plays like they're in the World Series of Poker. My experience with VEDH has had some highs and lows, but I've taken away some really useful lessons that I find helpful both in virtual and in-person Commander games. Number 1. Ask opponents how many cards they have in hand. Being in the habit of keeping it written down for other players on webcam, such as with a dry erase token, is a great way to handle it. Shout out to Josh at Mind Muscle Magic, who always has a dry erase token handy for just this purpose. Keeping a regular count of cards in each player's hand is a good way to threat assess, as the person with the most cards in hand usually is also the one who has the most potential threats available to play. And even in more casual or battle cruisery games, it's a great tiebreaker for which player you'll direct your interaction and attacks towards if everything else is equal. A corollary to this is to keep an eye on graveyards too. Get in the habit of asking players what the best cards in their graveyards are, creature and non-creature. Even if you don't have any particular way to take advantage of this information, you're making it apparent to every other player at the table, and it's a subtle way to direct player attention in a direction that benefits you if you keep asking for cards in hand, or cards in graveyards, and one player keeps saying they still have 12 cards in their hand with Reliquary Tower in play. And being in the habit of asking regularly also means you're less likely to telegraph when you have a card like Windfall in hand. Just like regularly asking about graveyards means you can hide the fact that you just drew your Living Death and you're considering a big play. Number 2. Ask opponents if they have any relevant creatures. What is your biggest blocker? Can you block a creature with flying? I got into this habit by playing a ton of Malcolm Kettis, and it's relevant to make sure at least one opponent is open to attacks from my flying commander. Try to be really specific in what you're asking. Do you have any flyers is useful when you're trying to assess your risk of being attacked, but do you have any untapped creatures that can block flyers is more helpful when you're trying to determine your attacks. Just as with the first recommendation, this is a good way to draw attention to potential threats. You might say, true, you have a 2-2, but I don't think you're very likely to block with your commander, especially considering how many cards Timna will let you draw on your next turn. It also means you're less likely to accidentally fly your commander into a creature with reach that you forgot had reach. And it may serve as a helpful reminder if you just plain forgot that your opponent's creatures have vigilance now, and save you from the embarrassment of attacking into a board that you assumed was open just because they attacked on their turn and you forgot to actually look in their direction. All mistakes which I have definitely made more times than I care to admit. Number 3. Normalize asking questions about cards you're not familiar with. There were an absurd number of new commanders printed since Ikoria in 2020, and the number of people who can quote the rules text on all of them is vanishingly small. If you, the enfranchised, experienced player, take the time to ask what a card does, it's a great way to break the ice for less enfranchised players to feel comfortable asking for more information. And understand that they aren't expected to understand what every single card ever printed does. It's also a great way to avoid making an error which costs you the game, just because you didn't remember if Jetmir counted himself among the 9 creatures to give his team +3/+0 Vigilance, Trample, and Double Strike, or if it was 9 other creatures that he needed to get to. For the record, I still always ask if the basic land I get off of Path to Exile comes into play tapped or not. It's also just a good way to break the ice during Rule Zero conversations. Oh, which Neheb are you playing? Can you read the rules text on it? I can never remember which one is which. Number 4, talking through your decision-making can help proactively diffuse tension at the table. Seriously, the days of acting indignant at being attacked, of responding to an early game chip-in as an affront to your dignity, and swearing an eternal blood feud over 2 points of damage from a spare stacks bear are probably best left in the playbook of commander politics of years gone by. Instead, I recommend being proactive in the same way that I recommended in being vocal earlier in this episode. Many times, the mock offense, or actual offense, at being attacked has less to do with life and more about disagreement with threat assessment or actually just feeling bullied. And I will say, whenever I fail to be vocal about this, I find that my odds of seeing tension increasing at the table definitely go up, which is not something I really want from my pastime. So I find that I like to give a reason for why I'm attacking somebody. I'm going to attack you this turn, because it's only a matter of time before your landfall deck gets Glacial Chasm online, and I need to get your life total low while I have a chance. Not only does this give my opponent a clear bit of reasoning where I can offer a logical explanation for why I'm attacking, which makes it a bit harder to deflect or act indignant over, but it also allows some of the same more subtle politicking that I described above, where I can plant that seed in the back of my other opponent's minds about potential threats that I'm worried about. And hopefully it means that my opponent also realizes that I'm not trying to bully them for no good reason. Instead, I'm taking the game actions that I'm taking because I respect them as an opponent in this game that we're all trying to enjoy together. And in this particular scenario, if both of the other players in the pod are looking to win through combat damage, making them aware that the clock is ticking before the landfall player finds their Glacial Chasm and essentially locks us out of being able to eliminate them, that's more pressure being applied in the direction that I need it to be applied for me to have the best chance to win. Number 5. Game 1 is a great way to calibrate your deck selection. Just because your first game with an unknown group didn't go perfectly doesn't mean that your efforts in a Rule 0 talk were wasted. Instead, it's a good opportunity to recalibrate your expectations. This past weekend, I got to play a few games, and our first game, well, I aimed pretty low with power, playing my mono-black, all-commons and uncommons, Jadar Nafalia Ghoulcaller deck, and proceeded to get crushed by the rest of the table who were all on big, hasty threats. No big deal, though. The game ended quickly, and I swapped out my deck for a slightly quicker and more aggressive deck to play into what the other players in the pod were looking for. For the record, I still lost Game 2, but even if Game 1 was lackluster for me, Game 2 was much better as a result of how I recalibrated for this one. A good way to approach this after a game is to ask if that was the style of game that people were looking for. If it was, maybe you swap to lean into that, such as leaving your combo-centric deck behind for a more synergy-driven deck, if that's what your opponents are looking for, particularly if they're playing decks that have a lot of difficulty interacting with spells on the stack. Or maybe you want to step up from a very casual to a more tuned deck because your opponents are going for it too fast for your first choice of deck to handle. It's also a good time to ask if anybody wants to play the same deck again, as selecting a deck that would be a good match for a known quantity can be much easier and result in better games overall. A lot of these suggestions reflect the steps that you can take to help set the tone of the games you play in. And it's important to remember that sometimes the tone isn't going to be one where everyone is trying to outplay their opponents and outmaneuver for the big win in a cutthroat environment. Commander is first and foremost a social format. Callahan from the Mind Sculptors has been arguing of late that CDH, for example, has more in common with reality TV shows like Survivor than it does with competitive 1v1 Magic formats. Setting the tone for the game can be as important as sequencing and threat assessment. Not all politicking in Commander is going to be, don't attack me for 3 turns and I won't blow up your Ristic Study treaties. Sometimes, it's just a subtle nudge to other players to pay attention to a current or potential threat. And sometimes, it's just the right time to lighten the mood. If you have any other lessons you've learned from playing VDH over the past few years, you can leave us a message in the comments on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. You can add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG. Or you can email us, gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.